Writers, KJ here. Have you heard me talk about Dabble yet? I mean, really listened? Dabble Writing Software is our new sponsor, and we love them. Serena and I can't stop playing with the outline piece of it, which is every bit as flexible as a bunch of post-it notes on your desk and a whole lot more portable. You can track everything that belongs within a scene, how that scene fits into multiple plot lines, and where that scene belongs in the book, and you can move it with the flick of a mouse. It's honestly a little too much fun. We don't want to encourage you to procrastinate, but getting your storyline right isn't procrastination, right? It's part of the work. So try out Dabble and let us know if it helps you get your work done by downloading a free trial at dabblewriter.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all things nonfiction, fiction, memoir, pitches, proposals, anything you're working on. We are the podcast about sitting down and getting that work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and the forthcoming The Addiction Inoculation, Raising Healthy Kids in a Culture of Dependence. That'll be out in April. And you can find my work at Airmail and The Atlantic and The New York Times and The Washington Post.
And I'm Serena Bowen, the author of 35-ish romance novels. My new one is called Lover Boy, and it can be found wherever ebooks are sold.
And regular books. Well, I guess it can't be, yeah, but...
Well,
yes,
sometimes
I have a regular book,
on the
but
bookstore.
That made it sound like there weren't regular books, print books,
and there are
totally
audio
print books and audio. And according to Jess, the audio is—it's
unbelievable. We'll dish about it in just a minute, but introduce yourself, weirdo.
Okay, you're right. I am KJ Dell'Antonia, the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, finally out in the world as of this recording, as well as the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, former editor and lead writer for The Motherlode at The New York Times. And yeah, that's who I am.
And that's one of the things we're here to talk about today, because it's so exciting. So many people have so many exciting things to say. For those of you who have missed it, who have lived under a rock, Reese Witherspoon selected KJ's book, The Chicken Sisters, for her Reese book club. What does she call it? Her Reese Witherspoon book
club. Reese's book,
Reese's book clubs. And the book has the pretty little emblem on the front. And there's all sorts of backstory, like why KJ couldn't take pictures of the books from certain angles and all that fun stuff that we get to dish about on this episode. So I get to ask, I get to interview you about the question that everyone wants to know. KJ, how'd you find out? Did Reese come to your house with a big thing of balloons and cookies?
A big poster of my book.
Cookies that she made for you herself?
Boy, you guys, way to like, you know, raise the bar, right?
No, not hardly. I was sitting around during the pandemic, as one does, with actually the whole family, I think, sitting around with me. We were watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine because we are classy. And my phone rang and I flipped it over and it was my editor, Margot Lipschultz. And I said, oh, no. Because that just, I mean, why would she call me at 8 o'clock on a random pandemic weeknight? It just, I could not, it never entered my mind that it was anything other than bad. And probably that because hashtag COVID, they were going to, you know, postpone the book indefinitely and forever and just really probably move on to other authors. So I picked it up and she shrieked, "This is the best phone call I have ever made in my entire career." And I was like, what? So,
did you?
Yeah.
It's just
that is amazing. Yeah, it was. I mean, I thought that the moment when Megan called me to ask me to do the Motherlode blog was the best moment of my career. That one was pretty darn good. This one is also extremely good. I might equate them.
I think, you know, people tend to talk about that agent phone call as capital T, capital C, the call. I think we can now, in our parlance, sort of refer to this as the call when Reese calls, when you find out about the Reese stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. And then there is, you know, an interval of knowing and having to keep the secret very, very, very deep and dark. And I did for a very, very, very long time. Well, no, it wasn't a very, very long time, but it felt like a very, very, very long time. And then I sort of slipped the nod to you two so that we could share the secret, and that made it much easier. And then it was time, and then poof.
And then we basically texted about it incessantly every single day.
Yes.
Because it was just so exciting.
And now this week, I have spent the week refreshing KJ's Amazon ranking.
This is so much fun. Serena's coming at it from the numbers perspective. And the thing that at some point, actually, Serena, I do want to talk to you about, you know, something that actually someone asked me just a little while ago, which is, you know, you had a book come out this week, too. And we talked about in the episode of Room for Two Princesses. We've talked about it in the past where KJ and I have admitted to, you know, professional jealousies. You know, it's a little weird because you had a book come out on Tuesday and so did KJ. And KJ's was like all over the place. And your lovely little book is wonderful and I adore it. And it's so well done. And was that hard?
You know, it's not, because I'm just on a different track. You know, I write fast for a genre market that is hungry for my books. And we both are going to have really amazing launch weeks that other writers would kill for. They're just very different.
Mm-hmm. I've thought about it in terms of the fact that because it takes me so long to write my books because of the research stuff, that, you know, then we get all excited. We're like, oh, it's been 4 years and Jess's book is finally coming out. And then I feel all guilty because, you know, shouldn't we be having like a launch party for Serena every single time a book comes out? Because you work so hard. And so it's, you know, it has occurred to me in the past that it's weird for me that, you know, that we don't do this like huge brouhaha for you. And I just wanted to make sure you were cool with that.
You know, I am. And I was on a Facebook Live watching KJ be interviewed by an author we both love the other night.
It was so good.
It was a great bookstore event held over Zoom, of course, and KJ did an amazing job, and it was super fun. And even when it was over, I was like, I never have to do those. And that's something different about romance, is that you don't ever have to drive to a bookstore hoping people will show up. Because the market just works differently. And I had this experience as in another life, launching a different kind of book, where I would, you know, set up the events and hope they went okay and hope that signing a few meant that the people working in the bookstore would hand sell my book after that. And I don't have to think about those things anymore. And it's just like, it's a different corner of publishing. And one of the things that I've really learned this year in 2020 is how many different ways to do this job there really are, including among other romance authors that I know and talk to. Everybody does this job a little differently. And I think it would be darn inconvenient to have 4 book parties a year, I'm just saying.
I think we'd get tired. I think it would be a lot of work and we would all get very tired, especially if we tried to keep each one a big secret. It would just be so hard. But I don't know. I think it was important. I think I wanted to ask, and I just think it's something that we have talked about in the past really openly, but we'd never talked about it with you, and I just wanted to open that Pandora's box.
Oh, well, you know, I suffer from the same amount of writer envy that every single other person does, and I think that if you look at somebody who's further along the path than you, which is, you know, some romance authors would look at me this way, and they think, well, Serena just hasn't made... She's made the USA Today list every year since 2014, you know, and meanwhile, I'm looking up at the person who just got a movie deal or, you know, just sold rights into a country that I've never sold into. Like, it's possible to always be on the wrong side of how to feel about these things. But honestly, this week was just a joy for me watching all of the cool PR stuff that KJ's book is getting. And wishing that we still lived in a time when there were more books that could enjoy this, the same elevated chatter in the world. It's just, it's amazing to see a book get so much love and the attention that it deserves.
It's also great, I think, that because the book is so happy, and if anyone's watched the Reese Witherspoon, the cutest thing, the Reese Witherspoon's Instagram announcement of the book, she's like giggling through the whole thing, and the book is yellow, and the book is bright and sunny and happy, and the picture of KJ that was in her Instagram announcement is so bright and sunny and happy, and I love seeing this breakthrough of good news right now as the world is getting sort of seasonally darker, and politically it's been a really hard year, and sort of culturally it's been a hard year, and it's so nice to have some good news. So thank you, KJ, for providing us with some good news this year.
Well, we have been able to enjoy the good news for, you know, a couple weeks anyway. So that
it's been so great.
That has
been so hard.
Yeah, it's definitely been a savior for me right now. And I have to say that I knew Serena was cool. Like I knew. Felt it the whole time. Like I have both crazy envy for your crew at Serendipity and how excited they are for every next book and all that stuff, and extreme gratitude for not having to, like, I'm like, oh, I don't have to do that. So,
yes.
You know, it's like she said, that there are so many different ways to do this. Now, that said, I mean, this particular way to do this, the way where Reese Witherspoon does all the work for you, that's a really good way to do it. And having now launched two books, admittedly the other one not a novel, so a slightly different experience, but, like, you know, for the other book, it was a great launch too. I got to go on the Today Show. I had all, you know, I did all kinds of fun things. I did do those fun bookstore events at which not necessarily everyone showed up, or anyone showed up. And it was that stressful pile. And absolutely, this is the gold standard.
Yeah. So 5 stars you would recommend.
Yeah, 5 stars would recommend. And, you know, it'll never happen again. Like, it'll never, this is, that Tuesday was the best launch day of my entire career and possibly the best day of my career. And that is fine. That is fantastic. It has been, I mean, it's so much fun, and I'm trying to just, like, appreciate that and not have the feelings, which I do have of, like, oh, you know, but there are so many other great debut novels that deserve this kind of attention. So I've just been trying to share them everywhere that I can. Like, when I did my Reese video, I was like, oh, and read this and this and this and this and this, and then I put them all in the links. So I hope that gave a little something to a few people. And but, you know, that, so I'm in this, I'm in a Facebook group, which is closed, but not secret. I don't think it's secret. Better not be secret. I'm going to feel bad if it is, but I don't see why. No, it totally isn't, because our name is everywhere. It's called Debuts 2020, and it's open to anyone, or it was open, it's closed now, to had a book, a first book coming out, first novel or first memoir was also fine, coming out in 2020, and I mean, thank goodness, because, boy, when they started that, no pandemic, right? It was just like, yay, we'll help each other, la, 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 la. And then it just became, you know, this and that and that. But it's been amazing. And also to watch within that group as, you know, some, I mean, there are people, I won't dish on who's, well, you can figure it out, but I mean, it's all over the place. But anyway, there are people in there whose books have been, you know, like, nominated for awards and hit the New York Times bestseller list and did this and did that and did this, and I mean, just all kinds of things, and yet they are still obsessed with that one bad Goodreads review. You know, it's awesome. And then just everybody kind of gets, okay, you can have a wonderful and amazing launch, an enviable launch experience, and still feel, you know, nobody ever feels like, hey, Stephen King probably feels like, hey, I'm really good at this, I'm good now. But it's hard to feel that way, right?
What's also funny is that Pub Day, you know, we did an episode on what Pub Day is like. and the fact that it's, you know, it's oddly quiet on the actual pub day.
Not
and
for
KJ,
me.
KJ, what did you do on actual pub day?
So before we do that, I wanted to talk about which things were already happening. Because, so, you know, when Reese Witherspoon joined the party, like, obviously, it just dwarfed everything else, right? But there were things, I mean, I had great things. Things were already going good. Like, it wasn't like I hadn't tried and set stuff up. And so I wanted to talk about which things that I have done were sort of pre-Reese. Both of the bookstore, all of the bookstore events that I, well, all of the ones that I have at the very beginning. So the Blue Willow Bookshop in Houston and the Watermark Bookshop in Wichita and the Still North Bookstore store here, which is actually going to be a real in-person event. But with COVID protections and only 6 people coming in at a time. And yeah, anyway, those were all set up already, right? And what else? And then, like, oh, podcast interviews. You know, I have some podcast interviews, some virtual interviews, so, you know, things like that. Those were all set up already. People, you know, lots of the almost every bookstagrammer that's sharing the book. So a bunch of bookstagrammers without the seal, like you can actually see, and there are a couple hundred of them. Those were all, mm-hmm. none of them knew about the Reese thing. So, like, Reese is everything, but not, because there mm-hmm. were things that were pre-Reese. So, and that is both, that's also kind of cool to me. Like, I'm definitely aware that, you know, Catherine Center was like, yes, I will do KJ's book without knowing that I had, you know, won the book launch lottery. So that was cool.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. Given that we're all fans, that was pretty darn
yes.
cool. I delivered a copy. I found, so on the day of, I went up to the one local bookseller that had opened up the boxes and had it out and ready and everything. And they had one on the shelf. And it was a surprise to them when she took it off the shelf and she said, oh, there's a thing on the cover here. And it hadn't, and I got there at 10 a.m. when they opened and it hadn't been announced yet. So I couldn't do anything with it. And I had been in touch with the one bookstagrammer who up here who was really excited to do a really pretty post about it. And so I let her know that I had a copy with the seal on it that she would have to wait until afternoon until after it was announced. But so I delivered it to her house that day.
So,
and that was super fun.
Some booksellers I have talked to, independent booksellers, say that they get a nod from their representative, their sales rep people. Some of them just say that they get kind of a personal, like, you might want to get a few more of this one, but not for things like this. So some booksellers have told me that, and this is all booksellers. This is me just talking to booksellers. This is not insider super duper scoop. It's
right.
Just I asked because I'm curious. And then another bookseller said that her reps actually send an email, and it says things like, you know, this book has an A nod, and this book has a B nod, and this book has a C nod. And they're not specific. It's not like A equals such and such. But, mm-hmm. you know, A is Good Morning America and Reese and or whatever. And mm-hmm. C is, an NPR interview or something maybe. So one bookseller said she got those things. But she also said my book wasn't on any of those lists. So, you know, maybe it depends on who the reps are and which... I don't know. It's really interesting. And then, like, places like Target and Walmart, they get a box that is apparently labeled the Good Morning America pick.
Huh.
But it's sealed. So, you know, they're not supposed to open it. Or whatever. Or at least that is what I have, that's what I've heard. And it's always so interesting to know how these things work behind the scenes, right? Because you're like, well, how do they know which book to have a lot of?
Yeah, exactly. And I actually, that bookstagrammer that I was talking to, she already knew. And I said, well, how did you know? And she said, well, because another bookstagrammer saw it on a table in Massachusetts at some store a couple days early. So clearly there's rules that some people play by and some people
that
don't.
That has happened to me because the Reese, the book club puts up clues that are read by the previous author, so I'll get to do that at the end of the month. And then that's a fun story there. But so I've been watching, you know, I've watched those, and I've watched those just as a reader because Reese's Book Club books are good. Anyway, I had had that experience of having been in the bookstore and seen the seal and then going to hear the clues and gone, oh, wait a minute. So the bookstores aren't supposed to put them out, but sometimes they do. So, you know.
As Serena said, I guess unless you're J.K. Rowling and it's one of the new Harry Potter books, that, you know, you get in huge trouble if you open the box ahead of time and there's so much media.
Right. Yeah.
You know, she's the one that gets all that, the secrecy sort of thing. So,
because of that debuts group, I knew the previous month's author, Christy Tate, who wrote Group. So, like, the day before the clues were released, she messaged me on Facebook and was like, oh, my God, I just read the clues and it has to be you. I'm going to feel so terrible if it's wrong, but I know I'm not wrong. I can't possibly be wrong. And, you know, she was not wrong. But I didn't tell her. I was like, no comment. But, you know, in all caps with exclamation points, so she could probably have guessed. So, and then I just, at that point when they released those clues, because people, it took a couple trickly things, but then people started just to know. And I think it's almost, I'm sure it's because of, you know, because when it's a book that's already out, the guesses are a little more all over the place. So I think because they don't have the sticker on them, because people have, anyway. Anyway, I just went off. Like I just shut down and didn't answer any DMs or anything because.
Yeah.
I was supposed to.
It was
to
like
be
the
quiet.
Night before, there was something like, I don't know, what did we decide, Serena?
400?
I think it got up to like 400 and something, you know, correct guesses that it was Chicken Sisters. And that was kind of cool because then it's like, okay, well, people have figured it out and it's sort of kind of out there because obviously that's what it is. And yeah, that was kind of fun to watch.
It was so much fun.
We kept texting each other. We're like, there's 100 people have guessed, 200 people have guessed. It was really fun. We had so much
fun. That's when I wrote down the Amazon ranks.
Yes.
So that we could.
That was smart. That was very, very smart. And I've thought to do that occasionally, like when people go on a show or something, I really quickly go and look at the Amazon rank so that I can see what impact, because I love to analyze the impact of those things. But yeah, that was really, really cool. I love that you did that. And then, of course, we obsess and refresh our screens. And I even texted, I said, can you break an iPhone screen by constantly pulling down to refresh?
Yeah, it took a while for it to come up. I went for a walk. So
yeah, that was smart.
I did write down Jess, when Kristen Bell shared The Gift of Failure, how many Instagram followers did you gain?
About all told by the end of the week, it was about 3,000, I think.
So I'm only up like 700.
Interesting.
Isn't that funny? I have noticed before that Reese's book club picks do not lead to people following the authors. But my Instagram is not just my book. You know, it's definitely a bookstagram, and I'm hopeful that people will join me and follow me so that then when my next book comes out, I can shout it to them. But anyway, it's just kind of interesting that I bet it'll be funny at the end of the month. We'll have to sort of take a look at that and compare. But that would be funny. If there were more...
I just feel like there's a real difference between people who read a lot of fiction and people who read a lot of nonfiction. So Jess was like the expert voice in this case. You know, Kristen Bell was saying, this expert voice is somebody that I've been listening to.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know, whereas fiction, sometimes the readers feel that the book exists in its own universe, which
That's
is actually like fine
yes.
with me.
Yeah.
And I think about this a lot because KJ mentioned my reader group on Facebook, which is about 5,000 people. And those readers are not my whole readership, but sometimes it's easy to forget. Like if you get some piece of feedback from the people who follow every single thing I do, it's like a different kind of feedback than the general experience of the people who experience the book. Like there are more people who read my books who don't ever think about me, which is fine. You know, they're just the world of the book exists unto itself. So I think following of an author of fiction is just like a different decision than
that's a good
than
point.
An expert.
That makes total sense. And it is
that's
like,
a really
like,
good point.
That's even like an even it's also fun because, you know, on the one hand, Reese's Book Club has all these followers and it's great and I'm getting all this, you know, but I've gotten some messages from friends that are like, yay, your book is out. And clearly either had no idea that it had been the reason, or just don't know that that is a huge deal. You know, which is, and at least one email, you know, the day of or the day after, where the person just had no idea of either. So it's not, and it was an interest, it was an industry person, but just, you know, for whatever reason, hadn't seen it. So it's kind of funny.
I've had people email, like producers email and ask me for interviews and still have not the slightest idea really of the books. I mean, you can be even tuned into like who you are as a person and still, it's just crazy because we get in our heads of like what's going on in the world.
I feel like what my Instagram looks like is what everyone's Instagram looks like. Did you ever do that? Like you glance over at somebody else's TweetDeck screen? I don't use TweetDeck anymore, but I used to. And you're like, wow, why? Those are different people.
Yeah. Well, actually, I use TweetDeck extensively, and I have a column up for Serena, and I have a column up for KJ. And when your books come out, I create a column for the title of your book with quotes around it. So I have a KJ column and I have a Chicken Sisters column. And it's fascinating. Serena's column is full of devout Goodreads people who say they're on page, you know, those when you rank things
updates.
Updates. Like, I'm on page 146 of blah, blah, blah of Serena's book. People recommending Serena's book to other people. And I never, like those I'm on page whatever at Goodreads, I never see those in my feed at all because I think fiction and nonfiction, again, they're Goodreads people and romance and sort of romance is more oriented, I think, towards, you know, Goodreads and all those sorts of fun things. The what's in your feed and what's in my feed is so different. I can't begin to explain to you. But it's fun to watch what's going on over in your feed. And because Serena has so many successful titles in other countries, there's a ton in like German and stuff like that, which is also really fun to watch.
My Instagram feed that faces me where I get tagged in stuff is like 40% German.
Yeah. Yeah. They do a lot of the cool pictures, too, because the covers of, like, the Ivy Years books and stuff are so cool over there.
Yeah. God bless German Instagrammers.
Well, let's see. You asked me what I did on launch day. And let's see. I refreshed my Instagram feed for a really long time. And then when the time I thought it might show up came and went, I went for a hike with my friend Kendall, and we took the dogs, and we were out for an hour and a half, and I was so glad I did, because it still hadn't, and all I would have done during that hour and a half was was refresh my Instagram feed. I didn't want, like, normally I'd have been emailing people to thank them and ask them for Amazon reviews and stuff like that, but I felt like I needed to wait for the response. And then finally, it popped up, and then it was just crazy, and I sat and I thanked people.
What was funny is that close friends didn't know. So, like, we have these tight-knit text groups, couple of different ones. And so all those people were like, oh, my, how could we not have known? That was really fun.
It was so hard not to tell people, too. But, oh, my gosh. Yeah, so and then we had a party. We had a Zoom party with a bunch of friends at 5. And then at 7, I had my event with Watermark Bookstore in Wichita, Kansas, which was so fun because the book is set in Kansas. And lots of people at that event, of course, knew the fried chicken restaurants that inspired the story, as I now say. And also because I was just chatting with the bookseller and they were like, we were just talking about how different our lives were in high school than a high school kid today, even pre-COVID. And I was like, yeah, we used to go out and drag Douglas. And she was like, oh my gosh, yes, dragging Douglas. And that's, you know, if you don't live in Wichita.
What is a dragging Douglas?
Drag me, you get in your car and you go up.
Oh, like drag racing.
Yeah, okay. Living in Kansas in the 90s was like living everyone else in the world in the 50s, okay? So, yeah. But we weren't really racing. It was more like people would just drive up and down with their windows open and their stereos blaring, shouting at each other. That was when we weren't hanging out in the Quick Trip parking lot, which is the other thing we did. Woohoo!
I was just really worried about some poor kid named Douglas who was getting dragged off that place.
No, I knew some Douglases. They were all fine. Yeah. Yeah.
It was awfully cool. We've talked about the next night thing was pretty cool because we've talked about Catherine Senner so much, enjoying her books on this podcast. So it was very cool to see her interview you and get to talk about. It was very inside baseball writerly stuff, which was lovely. People asked some really cool questions of you. One person, one of the questions you got that I thought was really astute, actually, was someone asked about therapy. And I think, and like, had you talked to therapists? Because I think one of the things I love so much about your book was your ability to convey the inner reflection of your characters, because some of your characters, like Amanda in particular, well, May and Amanda both, obviously, had to work through some real blinders that they were wearing, and you had to do a lot of like picking them apart as people and talking about how they were getting to a place where they understood their motivations. And I loved that question. I thought it was fantastic because I think it reflected some really hard work on your part as a storyteller. So I was glad that someone asked about that.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a cool question. And I have said some of the book, I mean, I have read a bunch of memoirs that sort of to me fit in with where my characters were. And I found that to be really, really helpful. Judy Bataleon had a memoir about growing up as the child of a hoarder. Another woman had a memoir about actually having both her parents were hoarders and she had instincts that way herself and how much she struggled with it. And I have recommended that book. It is really good. And now I can't remember what it is called, but I will find it and put it in the show notes. And then I read a couple of memoirs of people who were sort of Instagram-y famous organizing people. Mm-hmm. And in both cases, realizing that they had sort of, as one of my characters does, that they had organized their homes, but not their lives. So yeah, thank you memoir writers for helping to inform my fiction, because it definitely, you know, you know what's in your own head, but to figure out what's in other people's heads, you got to spend some time trying to crawl around in other people's heads. So memoirs, thank you.
Before we talk about what we've been reading, can I say one quick thing about both of your audiobooks, since that's been my experience of them this week? So KJ got to at least not really vote, but you got to have some input into who you'd like to have read
Absolutely.
Your book, right?
And they let me make suggestions too, which I did entirely thanks to the two of you, since I am not an audiobook reader. So I think it ended up with one suggestion from you guys and one person that the publisher had suggested that you two had also approved.
Well, so you got two fantastic, fantastic readers that that Serena and I both knew about. I'm opening.
Well, and I was so excited that they were willing to do two, because there are two protagonists, and my agent and I were unsure if they would be willing to do that. And that's absolutely 100% predates the Reese pick. So I think that was neat that they really wanted to do the audiobook right.
Well, and you both scored big time. So I've always liked Serena's narrators. I've always loved Serena's narrators. In fact, Serena got to meet one of her narrators when you finally
Serena
sent the
hires her narrators, so she really does get the credit, you know, whereas I get the sort of lucky.
So KJ's narrators are Cassandra Campbell and Exie Sands, and they're both fantastic, and I love them both. Serena's narrators, in fact, right before we started to record, I texted her, because one of the things that's always amazed me is Serena's books are often a male and a female, but there's going to be male dialogue within the female part and female dialogue within the male part. And isn't that weird? Because then suddenly you've got four different voices going on. But I realized when I was listening to Serena's book yesterday that I was deep into the females chapter, and she is able to do this thing with her voice that I was completely in the fact that this was the male. Like, it didn't even occur to me that this is a female reading in a male voice. And I was thinking about when we interviewed, who did we interview who also does audio books? We interviewed someone.
Jocelyn Jackson. Yes, she reads her own work.
And she was talking about the fact that as you get older, your voice gets less flexible and you're less able to do that kind of range, because I was realizing the talent involved. I think it's completely underestimated, the talent that is involved in reading an audiobook. Because some people are like, oh, KJ, did you read your audiobook? When it's dialogue, it's a whole other thing. And when you're in characters, and in KJ's book there, and well, and in Serena's book, there are some children and you've got to do a slight child thing. It's just, I'm always amazed. And you both of you on these audiobooks scored big time, because these narrators are fantastic. I think I have a new favorite male narrator, Serena, in the new book.
Joe Arden was the male narrator.
He's so good in Loverboy.
And he is a top narrator in romance.
He's got this gravelly, sexy thing going on. He's really good.
Well, he deserves it. He has a real career and is top paid. You have to schedule him way ahead of time. And the female narrator I was less familiar with, her name is Vanessa Edwin, but she is terrific. And I feel that I chose somebody who worked with this character as well, because sometimes I'm looking at a part thinking, well, this character's 22 years old. I have to make sure I pick somebody who sounds young enough. That's one of the things. Mm-hmm. But I just got the files back. It was funny when you were talking about Vanessa Edwin's man voice, because it is really perfect.
Yeah.
But I just hired a book that is two men. So it's two male narrators, and they have to sound different.
Yeah.
So when we were talking about KJ's books and giving her a list of suggestions, we had to pick two female voices that had contrast. Because when that new chapter starts and the new voice picks up, you need the listener to make sure she knows exactly who is speaking without, you know, banging a drum. So I just got these files back from this book that was two men. And one of them has a mid-range voice and the other one is deeper. Mm-hmm. And I wanted that instant contrast. But Teddy Hamilton, who has the more mid-range sound, did the best Stephen Dexter low voice for that new book. And I was floored. I was like, wow, he sounds just like the other guy. It was really, it's
amazing. That's really cool.
But do you worry about hiring Teddy Hamilton and people will get, people who really listen to your books like I do, am I going to hear Teddy Hamilton and think about Jamie or Wes or whoever he reads in Us books?
You might. And I get that a lot. You know, it's like,
I can't remember which one he is. Is he Wes or
he's
Jamie? Okay,
He's Jamie. But it's the same old thing, is that if I meet somebody at an event and they're like, oh, I loved the name of this book from 2015, you know, and I've written like 30 books since then, and I'm tired, you know, and I'm like struggling to finish another one, and everyone wants to talk about the book from 2015. So I think that Teddy Hamilton gets that same thing.
He's so good. And the reason it's at the top of my brain is that because we talked about the fact that during this pandemic, I've needed to comfort read a lot, and Us has been one of my comfort listens. So his voice is in my head a lot.
Yeah, he's the best.
And he's who you got to meet one time, right?
Oh, yeah. I've met a lot of my narrators, actually, and he's lovely.
And it was very weird to see a picture of him, because I put the character's face to that voice. And so to see this person who doesn't look like the characters, it was a very strange and cool experience.
You know, there's another narrator who's at the top of the romance charts that I've never worked with him, but he has never shown his face.
Huh.
And the women in some of the fan groups are like all just like desperate to know what this man looks like. And I think it's super smart that he's never shown his face, because whatever, you know, he wants them to be hearing the book from a perspective of what the characters are. And, you know, he's gonna, whatever, some people will be like, oh, that makes sense. And the half the people will be like, nah, that can't be him. And he's just, you know, he's a genius for never revealing himself.
We should, but first, let's have a pause for a little bit from one of our wonderful sponsors. As you've listened to us talk about author accelerator book coaches in every episode, have you ever thought to yourself, I could do that? If you have, you'll want to look into Author Accelerator's Book Coach Training Program. It's rigorous, thorough, ongoing, and proven to work. Author Accelerator's book coaches are excellent at what they do because they've put in the time to learn to do it right, from editing to book structure to the best ways to provide feedback that helps writers move forward. We think they're great, and maybe you'd like to be one of them. To find out more, head to bookcoaches.com/amwriting. All right, Jess, well, you sound excited.
So I am excited. Take off. So I listened to two books. I think the first one I got because it was free through this Amazon, you know, plus blah, blah, blah. Which is another, as we've talked about this before, Serena, that when one book is free and you like it, then you might go and buy the other books. And that's exactly what I did. So have either of you heard of Katherine Ryan Howard? She is a suspense thriller writer. And she, so the second book I got was called Distress Signals. And I'll have to look up the other one because it's on a different app. But and what's funny about her, her books are great. And actually, KJ, I was going to recommend her books to you because you were looking for recommendations, I think, for your mom, because she liked Sarah Stuart Taylor's book. Is that correct?
Yep.
I think that's correct. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so Kat, she would be a really, really good recommendation for that because her books are Scottish, Irish, and she's just really, really lovely. So so in Distress Signal, there's supposed to be all this tension about there's this writer and he's got to make all these edits, and yet at the same time his girlfriend disappears and no one believes him. Everyone thinks that the girlfriend is taken off of her own, you know, she's just left. And the whole time there's stress because his agent keeps calling because he has got a rewrite on this script that he's sold. And he's like, look, dude, if you don't get these, you can't blow this deadline. And of course, all this other stuff is going on. And I know I'm supposed to be stressed about the girlfriend missing and everything, but I was so stressed about the deadline. I'm like, how on earth is he going to be able to do these rewrites on this script when he's so stressed out? And I tweeted at her about that. I did a tweet about the fact that I, you know, was reading this and I couldn't get my brain off of the edits. And she's like, look, you are not the first person to bring that up. Writers tell her that all the time, which
was great.
Really, really funny. And she's just delightful. But she's got a really great voice, and I love her work. It's really, really good, and I recommend them to your mom. The first one was, I'm going to have to come back to it. The Liar's Girl, and they're all just really, so far. And I'm going to keep plowing through all of her books as an author would hope one would do if someone gave a free book. Yes, Serena?
Oh, I was just volunteering.
Serena raised her hand. Oh, I'm a teacher. So if you raise your hand, my instinct is to say, yes, Serena, what would you like to add to the discussion?
My mistake.
Okay, go ahead. I'm done.
Okay. I have fallen down the Ellen Hildebrand rabbit hole once again.
Okay.
And I had read lots of her. She's terrific. But I'd only read her standalones. And then I was getting on a plane to Paris 2 years ago, and I bought a new book of hers, and I sat down to read it. And I was, you know, somewhere over the mid-Atlantic when I swiped to turn the page again, and the book was over because I didn't know that she also wrote some, like, cliffhanger-y series. And so I was very upset.
Yeah.
Because there I was halfway to France with half a book. And I was mad, you know. And of course, the next one came out a year later, which is, you know, totally fine. I respect that. But I wasn't prepared. My expectations were not met. So anyway, I've just turned back to, and now I'm reading the second one in the series. And I believe the third one is out. And I'm really just taking notes about the way that she does this and how she keeps the story moving forward in terms of you always have a question at the end of a chapter. And she's just really good at this. So then, as one does, I opened the email from the little tiny Aetna library down the road from my house. It's a one room library.
I love that library.
So I was like, new fiction. And I found another Ellen Hildebrand. It was called Winter Stroll. And I replied to the email, hi, Barbara, I would like to read that book. And she said, okay, but that's book two in a series. Don't you want the first one? And I said, of course I do. And my goodness, small town libraries are the best thing ever. So I drove down the road and picked up the bag that she left outside with my name on it. And I drove home and I read the first two, you know, right in a row like cheese puffs, okay? And then I wrote down every device in those two books because they were so great. And I felt like I loved this family so much. And I'm like, well, there's a love triangle. Oh, look, another love triangle. There's a misunderstanding. There's the golden child having fallen. There's the young screw up getting his life together, you know, and I just sort of made notes about everything she'd done because it was a great read. And, you know, someday I want to plot a series like this.
Well, wait, and then with, I get her, to, with her, is this part of like, she does the standalones, and then there's like the whole series that's like in paradise ones on like an island somewhere, or which right. series are you talking
so
about?
The In Paradise one is the one that I was on the plane.
Oh, okay.
But this other one is the big series that she wrote before that.
Oh, okay.
So it was Winter Street and then Winter Stroll, and I got to the end of Winter Stroll, and guess what?
What?
Cliffhanger. So I didn't know there was a third book, and I went into the library's database to see if I could put a hold on book number three, and guess what? Our library doesn't own book number three. I know, no. I know. And I was supposed to be writing, remember. So I was like, fine, I'll get to it. And then 2 days later, I got an email from Barbara. And she said, I have book three. I didn't even ask her, though, is the funny thing. Oh. I did not ask. And I said, why, yes, Barbara, I would like to read book three. And she said, but I couldn't find it in the database. And she's like, it's an interlibrary loan.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know.
So sweet.
Now I'm sorry to say there's also a book four, so I'll have to find that one next. But book three was great. And that is my dissertation on Ellen Hildebrand today. Thank you for listening.
I have loved her standalones. Yeah. Loved them. And P.S., speaking of dissecting books, that was one of the things KJ got to tell Catherine Center that I love so much, is that KJ had dissected a Catherine Center book.
Yeah, that was funny.
And the look on her face was so sweet. She was like, you know, it's like, just so cool. Not only that when someone likes your book, but as an author, to hear that someone so respected the way you structured a book that you took it apart. That's like a whole other dorky, wonderful level. Yeah.
Yeah, that book is Things You Save in a Fire, and I am also still thinking about it.
Yeah, she did so many things. That the way that book opened and set itself up and then took off was a lesson in doing exactly that. So yeah. I have just looked at my picture from my Bookstagram of my November reads, and I am 99% sure that I have already talked about all of them on podcast episodes. The Plain Bad Heroines. Have I talked about Plain Bad Heroines? Heroines.
I don't think you have.
Okay.
You told me the whole plot
That's
of it,
right.
But I think we were on a walk.
So it's Emily M. Danforth, Plain Bad Heroines, and it is a big. Like, this is your book for your holiday, like, the whole holiday week. It's huge. It's like a zillion. It's like Harry Potter number 7 length. And it is this intricate, insane plot of a terrible, terrible tragedy occurs at a boarding school in Rhode Island in 1900-whatever. So there's that. And then there's a movie director, a horror movie director, who wants to make a movie about the terrible, And then a young girl, writes a book about the terrible, terrible tragedy while being guided by her mentor, who actually owns the house where the terrible, terrible tragedy occurred. Now the horror movie director wants to make a movie about the terrible, terrible tragedy. So that's his overt plan. But his real plan is to make a movie about the making of the movie about the terrible, terrible tragedy, because he thinks that the making of the movie will be haunted, or at least he wants it to be haunted. And then the question is it haunted? And then it's pretty clear that it is haunted, but then he's doing things to make it look haunted. Anyway, super super duper twisty, turny, entertaining. And there was definitely a point like three quarters of the way through where I was like, I don't know if she's going to be able to stick this landing. Like, I just am not seeing how all these bits are going to come together. But they pretty much did, and I was definitely satisfied. And that is a very entertaining... it is horror, but I did not at any moment, even when terrible things happened, maybe because I'm old now, it doesn't bother me anymore. I don't know. I just...
That's the thing I was most worried about with the Catherine Ryan Howard books, is I was so enjoying them, especially that first one, The Liar's Girl. I really just loved it. And the whole time I was getting tense. I'm like, is she going to be able to stick this landing? Have I guessed this already? And she stuck both landings for both The Liar's Girl and Distress Signals. And that's so nice. I get so sad when a really, really good book doesn't stick the landing, when the author doesn't stick the landing.
Well, this one definitely did. And it is an extremely queer story. So just so that you know that as you're going into it. But it is really, it coins the term Celesbian for one of its, for one of its characters. It's super
excellent.
Fun. So yay, I did have a hashtag I'm reading. Yay me.
Excellent.
All right. Well,
we ran long today because it was such a fun conversation.
Listen, everybody, if anyone wants a signed book plate for their issue, their copy of The Chicken Sisters, which I certainly hope you have, I will do that. I will put a link in the show notes to a Google Doc that if you fill it out, I will sign you up for that.
All right. And Chick AJ's book plates are so cute. And she sends us little text anytime she's working on them and coloring things. She sends us little text messages with pictures of them because they're so ridiculous.
I'm actually out of book plates, but I'm sure I will get more. So
All right.
I can acquire them.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for listening, and we appreciate you so much. So go check out the hashtag #MWriting Facebook group, where lots of fun things are happening to the writers and their people are announcing. We have these now new theme days where people get to rave about the things and rant about the things and talk about their accomplishments. And it's really fun to watch people watch people talk about their accomplishments and their fun things.
Y'all should sign up for our weekly email, which does include the show notes, but also puts you on the list to get the occasional free weekly bonuses that we put out. We do a weekly bonus every week for our official supporter subscribers, but we sometimes just send those to everyone on the list. And we've been doing a lot more just trying to make those emails fun and funky and different. And of course, then they have all the links in them that you need. So get on that list, which you can do at amwriting.substack.com, because I'm not entirely sure that I have fixed the old podcast link because we had technical difficulties. And so amwriting.substack.com.
You've been distracted, I have to say. You had a book coming out.
I am not sure where Amwriting Podcast is pointing right now, and I think it just might be pointing to my barn site, so that's not super helpful for people. you can see our barn.
There you go. All right, we good to go out?
Oh, no, amwritingpodcast.com is fine. It points to all the good things and the place where you can sign up. So, good. Yes.
Lovely. So thank you, everyone, for joining us this week for this extra long, super packed episode with fun revelations from KJ and Serena's Pub Day. And until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. Hashtag #AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.